Blog Talk Radio. Another fine show brought to you by the Law of Attraction Radio Network. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio is the radio show that is changing the world through science and spirituality as we realize that our well-being and our happiness is through our own thoughts. The Law of Attraction Talk Radio, the Jules. Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. Well, tonight we have a story of pure inspiration that will make your problems seem so insignificant by comparison. So gather around and open your ears, open your mind, and open your heart as you will learn some amazing things about listening to your inner guidance system. Amy Racina, author of Angels in the Wilderness, will be sharing her incredible journey as a solo hiker when she fell 60 feet from a cliff onto a rock. And that's the equivalent of falling six stories. And she was completely alone and in the wilderness for days. The chances of her surviving or even being rescued was not very likely. It's a great, great story, so stay tuned. Let's listen to these few words and we'll be right back with you. Come discover Canada's most unique and inspirational events, the Body, Soul, and Spirit Expo. Explore the many ways to improve your life mentally, physically, and spiritually as you expand your own consciousness. Attend seminars and workshops with the world's most life-changing authors, experts, and speakers. Body, Soul, Spirit Expo events are throughout Canada to fit your schedule, and with inspirational speakers such as shamanic best-selling author Dr. Stephen Farmer and superfood guru David Wolf. To find a Body, Soul, Spirit Expo that you would like to attend, go to www.bodysoulspiritexpo.com. That's Body, Soul, Spirit Expo.com. Access your forgotten abilities to create a happy and joyful life that is filled with abundance through the Law of Attraction Radio Network. Listen to shows that will inspire and uplift your consciousness, required to fulfill your desires, by downloading your favorite shows to your MP3 player. Join us at loaradionetwork.com. That's loaradionetwork.com. Okay, we're back. I just want to remind everyone that there are a few more weeks that people can sign up for our fabulous cruise. Remember, if you have a strong urge to come but are having problems with funds, contact me. Let's get you on board. You're the person that really benefit by releasing all of those blocks that keep you from moving forward. And that urging that you have, that feeling of huge desire to come on the cruise, that may very well be your inner guidance or soul who's urging you to be there because of a specific reason that you may be unaware of. So contact me at Jewels, that's J-E-W-E-L-S, at loaradionetwork.com, and let's talk. We have got the best energy healers coming on, and they can help you with shifting your current consciousness up to the next level for the mental and physical and emotional healing. You're going to love it. So send me an email. Speaking of healers, I want to update you on my dad. I've got so many emails from people sending him energy. It was so wonderful. Thank you all so, so very much. Well, my dad went through the chemo with flying colors. He didn't get sick or nauseated. As a matter of fact, after last week's show, I went to the hospital and discovered that he actually ate a burrito during the 12-hour chemo. That was amazing because we couldn't get him to eat for the last month, and here he was eating during chemo. I was amazed. I attribute this to all the wonderful healers and all the listeners who have been sending him light and love. Oh, thank you so much. You know, Dad was released from the hospital 2 days later, and he's back home where we are building up his strength and endurance for another round of chemo in about 3 weeks. If anyone has any recipes for organic vegetable juice for the juicer or recipes for vegetables that retain their vitamins, send me an email. I gotta admit, my cooking skills are definitely lacking. And, you know, that was actually my intent for many years, to have that lack. But now I'm finding it difficult. I need to learn how to cook healthy organics. And I would love some suggestions so that I can make him happy, because just going into straight vegetables is not making him a happy camper right now, but I realize the importance. By the way, I have been on Raymond Francis' Never Be Sick Again, Incredible Vitamins for Sugar Addiction. I want to just let you know my success with it. In about 3 weeks, I have dropped 11 pounds, bringing my total weight loss to over 30 pounds. I am absolutely not hungry, and I only want fruits and vegetables. It's really incredible. This vitamin regimen is absolutely incredible. I have no desire for sugar. I have no desire for processed foods. I just want to eat wonderful peaches, pears, strawberries, and vegetables. I just can't get enough. And it's true what he said. Being overweight has nothing to do with the amount you eat. It has to do with starving. If you don't eat the right nutritional food, your body starves and sends message to eat more. It all has to do with the cells. Once you start eating correctly, your body stops storing the fat and it naturally melts away. Now, when I talk about eating correctly, it is the exact opposite of the five food groups that we were taught that we must have every single day. So you need to stay away from those five food groups because that's not correct. Again, stop thinking about losing weight and start thinking about getting healthy cells. That's how you really will accomplish everything that you want. So go to beyondhealth.com and check out Raymond Francis products. You can't go wrong. You also need to realize that I'm not being paid to say any of this, and I am not a distributor of his products. I just want you to be healthy, happy, and full of bright well-being so that you can shine your light out to the world. So go to beyondhealth.com. He's got everything that can resolve your issues surrounding health and well-being. Now, next week, October 11th, we are doing a live broadcast in Cyrus World. And after the broadcast, we're going to be having a huge party, so come and play with us. There's a new hot air balloon ride. There's new cars for you to drive, of course, motorboats, jet skis, and brand new games that you can play that will teach you how to operate in Cyrus World. We're going to have a great time. It's all free, and you can keep on coming back as many times as you want. Now, you must have a PC computer or laptop to get into Cyrus. If you have a Mac, you need to have the parallel access to open up the Windows programs. And if you have that, then you can download and just join us. So just meet us in Cyrus World. And we're going to have so much fun teleporting to all the wonderful places. I want to show you the Taj Mahal Library and the huge mansion in the tree. That's actually a tree house, but it's really a mansion. And especially I want to show you the brand new University of Traction. It's going to knock your socks up. It's so wonderful. Come in and play with us on Sunday, October 11th. 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. That's Pacific Standard Time. Just come in and start playing with us. Listen to the live show as you fly around and just have a great old time. This is truly the place where you can begin to create in the virtual world and have it manifest in the physical world. So come along, let's play. Okay, now let's get going on tonight's show because it's really exciting. Amy Racina was introduced to backpacking at the age of 16, and she began soloing in her early 20s. She has trekked hundreds of miles through the wilderness that she loves, especially in the high country of the Sierra Nevada mountain range, and particularly Kings Canyon in Sequoia National Parks. Since the publication of the hard copy edition of Angels in Wilderness in October 2004, Amy has appeared on Lifetime TV's What Should You Do?, The Montel Williams Show, The Discovery Channel, and she has been seen in national and international publications such as the London Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, National Geographic, Outside Magazine, and Celebs Magazine from the UK, and of course the LA Times, and many, many, many others. She has given 100 presentations for conferences, wilderness groups, historical societies, hiking associations, Sierra Clubs groups, and many more. I am just so honored to have Amy on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you, Julie. I'm delighted to be here.
First, let me say I just loved the book. I couldn't put it down. I was just wondering what was going to be happening next. It was very exciting. Amy, you're drawn to being a solo backpacker. Tell us why that's so special to you.
Sure, and thank you for mentioning that, Julie. I am a solo backpacker most of the time. I sometimes go with friends, but I really prefer the solo experience. And there is a chapter in my book, Angels in the Wilderness, that describes many of the reasons why I enjoy that experience. One of the major reasons is because it's the only time in my life where there is not compromise or negotiation. I have only myself to please in those moments alone in the wilderness, and I really cherish those moments. I'm also closer to spirit when I'm by myself, listening to the wind in the trees and the sound of birds rather than listening to other human voices. I have to say that it is not advised to hike alone. There are more dangers, the obvious danger being if something goes wrong, you have nobody to go for help. But those of us who are solo hikers and backpackers have weighed the risks versus the rewards, and for myself, I find that the rewards are greater.
Another benefit that you mentioned is that if you're alone, you're able to actually have some of the animals come right up to you.
That is true. I have had several experiences like that, never a threatening experience. It's almost as though the wildlife considers me to be a wild thing like them. Uh-huh. Because I'm quiet, I'm not chatting, I'm not talking, I'm not making a lot of noise. And I've had some incredible experiences where a doe, and this is out in the middle of the wilderness, it's not where there are tame deer by campgrounds, came and sat down within a few hundred yards of me, and she just munched away on her grasses. I was cooking my dinner, and she seemed to recognize that I was no threat to her and that I, like her, was a lone female just simply cooking my dinner.
Tell us about the bunnies.
Oh, yes, that's one of my favorite experiences. I often don't carry a tent when I'm backpacking. I carry a tarp in case of rain, but I really prefer to sleep under the open stars. And on this particular morning, I woke up, and I tend to wake up at dawn, and I opened my eyes, and I was eyeball to eyeball with a baby bunny. And he looked at me, and I looked at him, and I thought, wow, and I slowly sat up so as not to scare him, and I noticed that there were baby bunnies hopping everywhere in the grass, like little gray fuzzy balls of popcorn. Absolutely magical.
Wow, what an absolute thrill that must have been. Let's start off by talking about the book. I really loved how you organized it. It really kept the suspense up. But let's talk from the very beginning. Where exactly were you hiking before your accident happened?
Well, the experience that I wrote my book about took place in 2003, and I was on an extended backpacking trip in Kings Canyon National Park. Kings Canyon is next to Sequoia, and for anybody who doesn't know where it is, it's about 200 miles south of Yosemite, but it's also up in the Sierra Nevada mountains. The terrain looks very much like it does in Yosemite, but the area is much less traveled.
What time of year was it?
It was in August, which is basically the end of the backpacking season, because when you get into September in the High Sierra, it may start to snow at any moment.
I am sure you were thoroughly enjoying yourself. So give us the details of what exactly happened.
You're correct that I was thoroughly enjoying myself. The trip was absolutely magnificent, right up until day 12, which is the day that I took my fall. And I had done some climbing, some gentle climbing that morning, but when I fell, I was working my way down into a place called the Tehipite Valley. So I was going downhill. It's a fairly rugged downhill. The Tehipite Valley plunges a vertical mile from rim to the bottom of the valley. That's as deep as the Grand Canyon.
Mm.
And most of the elevation is dropped you hike about 3.5 miles and you go down a vertical mile. So it's very, very steep, as you can imagine.
Being such an experienced solo hiker, why do you think you fell? What was the reason?
Why do I think I fell? You know, that's a very good question. I have scoured my own mind, my own recollections, my own consciousness. Could I have done something differently? Could I have been more careful, more cautious, taken another route? And the only answer I can come up with is no. I'm a very cautious hiker. I was being careful. I was strong. I was in good shape at that point in time. And I can't come up with anything I could have done differently. The trail that I was working my way down is an unmaintained trail, and I knew that, but I had also met several people who had climbed up it a few days previously, so I knew that it was passable. At the time when I fell, I had lost the trail, so I was off trail. I didn't intend to be off trail, and I was confident that I could find it again. So I was working my way down, and as I was working my way cautiously down this steep grade, holding onto a rock with one hand and a tree with the other, one foot firmly planted, I reached out the other foot, my right foot, and suddenly the entire hillside gave way. The rock and the tree and my foot all gave way at the same time, and I was thrust out into midair and just going straight down.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's hard for me to think about it still, too. Yeah, and one of the greatest issues was I felt safe. I was confident that I was working my way down. So imagine going from feeling totally safe one moment to sure to die the next moment.
Let's talk about the actual fall. In one way, you're really lucky in that your body went into immediate shock.
Shock was a wonderful thing because it saved me from feeling the full brunt of the pain. I fell 60 feet, Julie, and that's like falling off of a 6-story building. As I was going down, you know, I'm anticipating when my time does come that I will see a tunnel of light. I will feel welcomed into the other unknown. I will embrace my passing. But in that 1.5 to 2 seconds as I was falling, I was just terribly, terribly disappointed. I hit the rock 60 feet below, and my first thought was, I'm still alive. And I honestly had not expected that that would be so. I didn't feel the pain when I hit, but I thought, I'm still alive, and I looked around me, and my body was still there, but it was very badly damaged.
Tell us the extent of your injuries.
I had broken my hip in 2 places. I had broken both of my legs in 10 other places. The most obvious injury right away, well, I had snapped off a front tooth. I think I had broken or at least sprained my nose. But worst of all, my right knee was a gaping, open, bloody hole. And I remember looking down and thinking, this is not good. It just shredded flesh and little bits of bone fragments sticking out everywhere. And I thought, this isn't good. I need to do something about this. So the first thing I did was try to move my legs, and that actually was the most terrifying part of the injuries, I couldn't move either leg so much as an inch.
Was your first thought that you broke your back?
I thought about that. That went through my mind. And so what I did was I pried off my hiking boots. And it was a chore because I had sprained some fingers and hurt my wrist as well. But I got the boots off, and I saw that I could still move my toes just a tiny bit. So that meant I had not severed my spine. I was not paralyzed.
It's amazing that you didn't have more severe injuries.
You know, despite the tragedy of the accident, I was incredibly lucky in many ways. And I think that's one of the things that kept me alive is my ability to acknowledge what was good about even this devastating situation.
Your ability to focus in on precisely one issue at a time really helped you to move forward with the right frame of mind. You're like a survivalist, very organized and meticulous.
You know, I think it's true, but not to give myself too much credit, I did everything I could in this situation to keep myself alive, but without a whole series of miracles and a series of, well, I call them my wilderness angels, human angels, uh-huh, who helped to save me, I would not have made it out alive. So I was kind of co-creating the experience. I did the best I could, but I cannot take credit for my own rescue.
So after you landed and you assessed the damage within your body, what happened? You stayed on that rock for the next night, or was it two nights?
No, I stayed there the first night. I applied basic first aid to the open wounds because the first danger was simply that I would bleed to death. The next was that I would die of shock and exposure. So I took care of those basic needs, and then I either fell asleep or passed out. The following morning, now I'm kind of a stubborn person, Julie, and sometimes that's bad. On this day, it was very good. And I realized that I had been given a second chance. Of course, I prayed for help. And then I realized I was the only one that I had to depend on, the only human being. And so I made a plan the next morning. I got up and I made myself a cup of coffee and I made a plan. The plan involved dragging myself, still unable to move my legs, but dragging myself down the ravine into which I had fallen towards where I knew there was a larger trail. The stream ran into the Middle Fork Kings River, and according to my map, next to the river was a larger trail. So I reasoned to myself, and it was not a bad plan, that if I could somehow pull myself to the river and lay myself across the larger trail, I might still be found before time ran out. But the most important thing about the plan, other than its possibility of success, was that it gave me something to focus on, something that I could do to help myself, other than just sit there and wait to almost certainly die.
So you began scooching down the hill with a plan of action.
That describes what I was doing pretty accurately, too.
Scooching down that hill, but you were still in pain, although it wasn't paralyzing pain, but you had the drive to start moving. That's what's incredible.
Yes. I still couldn't move my legs. By now they were swollen, so they were somewhat stiff. Uh-huh. But what I did was I sat on my butt, and my backpack had also fallen nearby within arm's reach. So I had my gear with me, warm clothes, a down sleeping bag, food, basically what I need to survive. I knew that if I left it behind, I couldn't go back. So I tied my backpack around my waist with a piece of rope, also from the pack, sat on my butt, and shoving my limp legs in front of me, I pulled myself along with my hands facing forwards.
And you managed to go how far in your first day?
Well, I think it was about 50 yards, right, about 150 feet. It sounds like a long way, and it felt like a long, long way, but it's not that far, really. And it kept me from thinking about the probable outcome, which honestly at that point was that I would die. I was 25 miles from a trailhead, from any road access, 25 very mountainous miles in an area where only 5 to 10 people hike every season.
Wow, so the chances of someone coming along and finding you were almost nil. At one point, you had to cross a creek, which was a bit difficult. Tell us about that.
And I would sometimes shift myself into this small stream near which I had fallen. And in this case, the stream had pooled up, and the water, of course, the water in the Sierra is snow melt, so it's ice cold, which helped to numb my injuries, but the danger was that I would get so chilled that I would die of hypothermia in the night. In this particular case, I was in the pool, and it did feel good without the gravity. It felt good on my terribly injured legs, and I was pulling myself with my arms, because that was all I had to work with, up onto this ledge out of the pool, and I remember shifting my hip and being engulfed by a wave of pain, and I thought, yes, there's pain there, but I can't give in. If I pass out now, I'll fall face down and drown. So I just kind of hung on. Again, I was a little removed from the pain. I remember it, I noticed it, but I knew I couldn't give in to it.
Now, that's what you call determination. You were very meticulous about your food supply and measuring everything out to last as long as you can. You even had aspirin, wasn't it?
Tylenol. I had 8 of them when I fell, yeah.
Did you ever think that you would run out of your supplies before you were found?
You know, I didn't really focus on that. I had enough food for about 6 more days, and I was due into the trailhead in 5 more days. I wasn't very hungry after I fell. I was probably in too much shock, but I knew I had to force myself to keep eating something. But the last thing that would have killed me was starvation.
I think for many of us, that would have been our first concern. What are we going to do when we run out? That just shows your strong character and the way that you think in such an organized manner. Now, your goal was to reach this trail so that you might be able to have somebody come along and find you. So let's take it from that point. You went about a mile?
It was less than a mile. I made 50 yards the first day and about 100 yards the second day. I was getting a little better with my technique. And when I had covered about 100 yards, I had come to a place in the ravine where I was stranded, where I couldn't go any farther. There were natural obstacles that were piled up. There was a little rough dam of loose rocks and sticks that had dammed up the water. The only way that I could get around that little pool and the dam was to hoist myself up on this 18-inch dirt ledge and work my way around these obstacles. I mean, we're not in water world here. You know, we're in the wilderness and there are obstacles. So by now we're at the end of the third day of my dragging myself down the ravine, and I was probably starting to weaken. I thought perhaps I was delirious, but I wasn't sure. And I realized that if I couldn't get myself up on this ledge, I couldn't continue with my plan. So I tried for hours to somehow hoist my body up on this ledge with my arms, stuffing sticks under myself, stuffing my pack and my gear under me, and nothing. I mean, 18 inches, any of us could hop up on an 18-inch ledge on a good day or even a bad one. But nothing that I could do could leverage my damaged body up onto the ledge. I still had a plan. Well, the plans were getting limper as the days went by, but I had been, as I dragged myself down the ravine, I had been collecting up a little bundle of sticks, the ones that I could reach with my arms, because my friends and family knew where I was, and they knew when I was expected back. So I thought, in about 2 or 3 more days, they will send in help, and they will come looking for me. And I wanted to be ready to build a signal fire if helicopters should come to find me.
Now, that was smart. So you are now just camped out, can't go any further, and you are waiting to be rescued somehow, some way, by lighting a fire or whatever. So what happened next?
So we're at the end of the third day past my fall, and Julie, this was about as close as I came to totally losing hope. I wasn't really ready to despair, but I couldn't imagine that I would be saved at that point. I was stranded here, unable to move at this point, doubting that anybody would happen by. And I hollered out, I made myself a cup of tea, which is what I do in times of stress, and I hollered out desperately one more time, help, help, I'm tired of this adventure, I'm sick of this, I've had enough, help. I think I was a little crazy at that point, but I called out. And that was when I heard the sound that would be my salvation. It was two little toots of a whistle, and backpackers commonly carry whistles with them. And it was faint, it was distant, and I wasn't sure what it was, but I thought, maybe, just maybe, there's a human being out there somewhere, and they have heard me calling out. Absolutely berserk, screaming at the top of my lungs. I mean, I had stayed calm for 3 days and nights. So I heard these two toots, and I thought, if there is a human being out there, it is my chance, the answer to my prayers, and it is my only chance. I started screaming at the top of my lungs. I threw my tea water out and grabbed my little pot and banged on it hysterically. I whacked a hole with my knife in the bottom of my water container to use it as a megaphone, because what I wanted most to do was to hop up and run towards the sound. Right. And that was the one thing I could not do. So I screamed and hollered, shouted out my position, my situation. I believe it was about 2 hours. And sometimes I thought I would hear a voice, and other times I couldn't hear anything.
Well, that must have been tough. Talk about going back and forth with the motions. One minute thinking, oh, there's somebody out there, and the next minute thinking, they didn't hear me, they're passing me by. Ouch, that has got to hurt.
It was excruciating. All kinds of doubt went through my mind. I thought, I'm hallucinating. I thought, maybe it's just the sound of the water trickling through the ravine, and it would pour down. It made quite a lot of noise. And then I thought, maybe there are people out there, but they're on vacation, and they wouldn't want to be bothered with little old me. And I thought, maybe it's a Boy Scout troop, and they're just whistling for fun, as Boy Scouts will sometimes do. So I had a combination of ecstatic relief and terrible doubt and desperation, especially desperation.
And then it happened. Tell us about it.
I heard a sound climbing down the slope opposite where I was stranded, and I thought, it sounds like a person. I was terribly afraid that whoever they were, they would fall as I had done. But it didn't work out that way, and a few minutes later, I peered through the leafy bushes, and I saw a man standing there on solid ground, a real live human being. His name is Jake, and he was the first of my wilderness angels. And he walked across the rocky ground. He knew something horrible had happened. At this point, my legs were swollen. My face and my entire body had bruises. I looked like I had a black eye over my entire body. And he walked over and he said very calmly, "Hi, I'm Jake." And I said, "Hi, I'm Amy." And then I burst into tears. Yes. He was my angel. You know, entirely unexpected in the middle of the wilderness, and I was certain at that point that I had been saved.
But that wasn't necessarily the end of it. The rescue became a major ordeal.
It was. You know, I was naive in my thought that I had been saved. Jake had been hiking by on the trail above me, which was not too far out of earshot, but it was pretty far out of sight. He was hiking by with his wife Leslie and their friend Walter. And Walter came down into the ravine and joined us. Walter is a wilderness medic, and he took my vital signs and saw that I had a rapid heartbeat, dilated pupils, and an elevated temperature. So his opinion was that I was slipping into septic shock, and he was very accurate. Septic shock is about 80% lethal, even if you're hospitalized. So Walter's thought, and he didn't share it with me at the time, mercifully, was that I wouldn't live through another night. We're now at late afternoon on the third day, coming up onto dusk. So I'm still 25 miles from nowhere, and my rescuers, my three angels, have to figure out how to get me out of there, have to inform the authorities. There is no cell phone access, people always want to know.
Oh, darn. And if there had been reception, you would have been able to carry a cell phone, but...
Right. But I checked it out last time I was in the park. There is no cell phone access until you get 30 miles outside of the national park boundary. So my rescuers powwowed amongst themselves, and they shared their wisdom. A plan was made for getting me out. Now, Walter is also a long-distance runner, in addition to being a medic. but he was suffering from two broken ribs and a torn rotator cuff in his shoulder that he had gotten during a whitewater rafting rescue a few weeks earlier. But Walter is a long-distance runner, so he was willing to run for help the following morning. There was no question of anybody going for help that evening. So the plan was made. Walter would run by on the trail up above where Jake and I were camped. Leslie would stay in the valley below and build a huge X of stones to signal helicopters, and Walter would run. When he got above where Jake and I were stranded, he would whistle twice, toot, toot, is everything okay? Jake and I would whistle back, toot, toot, everything's great. What the whistles really meant were, is she still alive? Because Walter didn't think that it would be so. And he had no intention of making that horrendous run if I had died during the night. But I was alive the next morning. We heard the whistles, we whistled back, and Walter was off and running. Walter ran 13 miles. That's the equivalent of running out of the Grand Canyon. By then, he was at the rim of the Tehipite Valley, and there's a small private holding there. It's called Crown Valley. They're a little group of rustic cabins, one of the few private holdings within the national park system. And he thought he heard voices, so he straggled in, obviously exhausted, to Crown Valley, and he found a group of people there, some guys with their sons on a birthday fishing holiday. And who should they be but a group of firefighters?
And here's one miracle that occurred.
I have chills when I think of this. Firefighters. And not only that, they had stock with them. They had horses. So even as Walter is panting out his story, Mark Johnson, the fire chief, is saddling up the fastest horse in the camp. And Mark rides hard for the trailhead because one of his friends had left a satellite phone in his car.
Unbelievable.
It's the closest access of a satellite phone. So Mark rides hard another 12 miles to the trailhead. He gets the satellite phone and he calls a friend on the outside who has a cell phone. The friend with the cell phone calls 911. And the hunt is on. And I cry every time I think of this because without all of those people being in place, Jake and Walter and Mark Johnson with his horse, the friend with the satellite phone, the friend with the cell phone, I wouldn't be alive today. There's no doubt about that.
It's all amazing. But then you had a couple of rangers who managed to get up there and actually give you some medical care as you were waiting for the actual rescue. So talk about that and getting that helicopter and being up in the air.
Do we really have to talk about?
Well, you had to have a strong stomach for heights.
Well, you'd be surprised what you can do when you have no other choice. So there were two helicopters involved in my rescue and a fabulous team of rescue rangers. By now, we're on the evening of the fourth day, and dusk is closing in. Helicopters are supposed to be on the ground before dusk. But everybody around me knew that I wasn't going to make it through another day, so a rescue plan was made. The plan was that the CHP helicopter, and I've loved the CHP from now on because of this incident, but the CHP helicopter, which was the only copter large enough to airlift me out, would hover over the ravine where I was stranded. My two rescue rangers and Jake would have just a few minutes to load me into the stretcher, which the helicopter would leave. Then I would be lifted up, dangling far above the ravine into which I had fallen by two small straps, one at the head and one at the foot. My rescue rangers, Debbie and Fred, would control the wild swing of the litter from down below because it was quite possible I would crash in my stretcher, strapped in into the ravine walls and be killed like that if they couldn't control the swing. So Debbie, Rescue Ranger Debbie, who turns out to be one of the foremost rescue rangers in the entire park system, explained the plan to me, and I hated the plan. I was absolutely terrified, but I knew I really had no choice, so I said, okay. I asked Debbie, how long will it take? And she said, after we strap you in, it'll take about 4 minutes to get you to the copter. So I figured I can do anything for 4 minutes. They strapped me into the stretcher. They put a flap over my head. There was something that looked alarmingly like a body bag in the stretcher. I had my arms crossed over my chest. I shut my eyes. Debbie said, don't open your eyes for anything. And I was off into the air, swinging in midair under the helicopter. Absolutely terrified, but Debbie and Fred said, don't worry. We took a seminar on how to do this just last weekend.
Yeah.
I hope that was a joke. And she was just trying to lighten the mood.
Debbie and Fred were awesome rescue rangers, just an incredible team. But they managed to maintain some levity throughout the proceedings. I mean, they knew I was about to die, and the chances of actually getting me rescued were slim. But they were kind, they were courteous, they were efficient, and they were also funny. I'm pretty sure they had done something like this before.
Thank God.
It's a trick I've used many times, and it sounds deceptively simple, but Debbie said 4 minutes, so I simply counted. I couldn't think about the fact that I was swinging in midair. I'm terrified of heights, and my last experience in midair was almost death. So I shut my eyes tight and I counted to 100, 1,001, 1,002, 1,003. Again, it gave me focus, something to focus on, simply the numbers. When I had counted to 1,400, my stretcher was resting on the ground in the Tehipite Valley next to the police helicopter.
Then you were transported to the hospital and you arrived at the hospital safe and sound. But it wasn't the end of the ordeal, because your experience with the hospital is where your survival instincts kick in again. And I knew exactly what you were talking about. I was sitting in the hospital with my father for the last 2 weeks and reading this book, and I'm going, my goodness, we must be at the same hospital, have the same things or some similar things that happened. So I'm understanding exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and so you have had the hospital experience. It's a different kind of survival. Many of the same skills apply.
Yes, and after you were rescued, you really became kind of a celebrity in the area because of your dramatic rescue.
Yes, I was very badly injured. I didn't even realize until much later how badly injured I was. But because I was healthy and fit at the time, the hospital had a high chance of saving me. I was taken to University Medical Center in Fresno, which is a rough hospital. It's in a rough area. They have armed guards in all the hallways, and they have to shut down the ER every night so there won't be drug raids on it. But they do a fabulous job of patching people up. Now, I was not one of the usual victims of gang fights or drugs that they get in that hospital. I was a healthy hiker until my fall. So as badly injured as I was, they could apply their medical skills and quite probably save me. So I was a very interesting case to them.
How long were you in the hospital?
I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. I had 12 surgeries during that time. When I was released finally from the hospital, I couldn't so much as they managed to save both of my legs. I had not focused on the fact that I might have to lose one, especially the right leg that was so badly infected by then from the knee injury. And I had not also gotten to thinking I might never be able to walk again. All of these were possibilities. So I was released from the hospital after 3 weeks, still with a major cast on my ankle and my right knee, and unable to so much as lift either leg. I had no strength left in my limbs at all. I'd lost about 30 pounds in the hospital, despite their attempts to feed me.
And it took you 8 months to fully recuperate and recover from the fall.
This is one of my favorite parts of the story, because it's about the power of community. And many of us use the word community, but this was real community. I was a single working mother, self-employed, and I was unable to walk or drive for close to 8 months after I got home. I couldn't afford a nursing home, so one of the people in my community created a nursing room in her own house to take care of me for a month. I still had to have internal IV antibiotics, and another friend volunteered to learn how to change the antibiotics, and he would come over twice a day and do that for me. My friends drove me everywhere. They took care of my son, my business, so I wouldn't lose it. They did absolutely everything for me. And I cried more in those weeks out of gratitude than I had during my ordeal in the ravine, because I had always felt that I'm a pretty strong woman, and I'm a pretty giving kind of a person, but I had always thought that that was my value to my friends, and that if ever I wasn't able to do those things, I would be alone and abandoned. And it was just the opposite. People that I had only met once came out of nowhere and said, I'll bring you dinner today. I'll drive you to physical therapy. And I just was amazed at the contributions of all of these people and the fabric that they created to get me up and running until I could walk and work and take care of my son and drive again.
I believe, as do most of the listeners out there, that things happen for a reason. What do you think that reason was? It just seems like there was so many divine interventions going on to save you. What do you think the real reason for this happening was?
Right. I think so, too. And I don't really believe in coincidence, but even if I did, the sequence of coincidences, and I do think that they are miracles. All of those people, Jake Leslie and Walter, Mark Johnson with his horse, the cell phone, the helicopter pilots being in place, I think there must be some divine purpose to that. It's possible that I may never know all of the reasons, but I know some of them. For me personally, this experience enabled me to open up more to humankind, to people, to let people in. Previously, I was strong enough so I could just do anything myself, and that's what I did. But I was so helpless that I had no choice. And some of us, we stubborn people, maybe we need to slam onto a bed of rock to get these messages. But it enabled me to open up and allow other people to help me and to care for me. And I also was able to let them in. Well, another reason that this happened, and I've had a message from, specific message from God, from Goddess, from whatever spiritual powers one believes in, that the reason that I was saved was because I have a duty to tell my story. And the message was, there are people that need to hear this story. You may never know them or meet them, but they need to hear your story. So at that point, it wasn't about my own ego telling this great story. It was about putting it out there into the world, and that there will be other people who will be challenged in ways that I don't know about who need to hear this story.
You know, I think there's another side to this story that is there, but it's just not so literal. That's about paying attention to your inner guidance. Now, all the time that you were on that rock after it first happened and in shock for basically 3 or 4 days, you still had the power to listen to your inner guidance, your knowingness that everything would be all right, that keep moving, keep focusing on this. It has to do with the inner guidance, and it's really amazing that you could tap into it in your deep state of shock. Most people would have that emotion of pure fear take over and be unable to go and do the things that you needed to do to get to that place where you could run into somebody who could help you. So it has to do with letting go, reaching down deep, pulling out, and using that action from that inner guidance. I think that's really the exceptional message that I wanted all of my listeners to hear. That's where we need to go, into the feeling of the knowingness.
I can absolutely concur, wholeheartedly agree. There's a moment when I know I'm making the right decision that feels like a ping. It reminds me of the bright sunlight on a blade of grass in the High Sierra Mountains. And it's as though everything, including myself, glows just a little bit brighter for that moment. Jake believes that he would not have heard me hiking by on the trail above. Jake was the man who heard me, my first angel. he thinks he would not have heard me if I had stayed where I had fallen.
Yeah.
Because we were curving around the ravine. So I do think it was inner guidance that had me drag myself down that horrendous steep ravine to a place where Jake, passing by at just the right moment, could hear me calling out. Yeah, that ping moment when the world around you and yourself are all in agreement. It's like, yes, I should be right here, right now, doing what I'm doing. And those are the most perfect of moments.
Let's talk about another teaching moment or another experience that we can all learn from. And that was about Elmira in the hospital.
She was a kind of a sad person who had never had many opportunities in life, but I thought this could be me. You know, in a way, she is me, laying next to me in the hospital bed, and she reminded me of how lucky I was. But she did also remind me of the gifts that I could give her, and she responded to my kindness and to my suggestions. So, yeah, she's one of my favorite characters in the story, but people don't usually mention her.
Well, I thought it was kind of important because you are being compassionate, you're being kind, and you're helping her realize that she is, in fact, a very, very important person. And she begins to recognize it by your kindness. And that just teaches everyone another step. Instead of getting really angry and, like I happened to be in the hospital, really angry and upset, that I thought that they weren't doing their job, when in fact, if you did the opposite approach, you would get a better reception and people more willing to help you. It's common knowledge, but when those emotions come up, it's a very, very important thing to realize. This might be a great time to tell everyone how to get the book. Go to www.angelsinthewilderness.com. You can find it on Amazon or any fine bookstore. Just look for it. You will love reading this, and again, you're not going to be able to put it down. We only touched a little bit of what actually happened, so if you really want to hear the full story and be absolutely amazed, I'd recommend this book. You will read it within a couple hours. It's absolutely terrific. So, Amy, what's in store for you coming up? You have anything else planned?
Telling my story, because I don't think that I'm a particularly special person. Well, what I believe is that any of us, if challenged in this way, would find the inner strength. So telling my story is a main focus. And the next of what I'm going to say might be at odds with your personal beliefs, but what I do is wait for the signs. I look for signs. What comes next?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of in a waiting pattern right now. You know, I'm like, what is the next phase? And I'm looking for those elements that conspire to guide me,
mm-hmm.
whether they come from God or from circumstance. But they're always there. They've always guided me in my life.
Oh, yes. We encourage everyone to be on the lookout for those big pieces of driftwood that signal something to us, either action or knowing that something is on its way to us. So we're very much into the signs and just paying attention to the universe. That's what the law of attraction is all about. Amy, thank you so much for coming on Law of Attraction Talk Radio and sharing this most miraculous story with us. You know, it's so wonderful to hear from people like you who have literally been in a life and death situation. And it helps everyone to take the focus off of everyday occurrences and realize how lucky we all are. And if we only simply listen to that inner ping, we are going to be just fine. Thanks, Amy, for the wonderful message.
Thank you so much, Julie. I have really enjoyed speaking with you. And hello also to your listeners. And thank you so much for reading and enjoying and appreciating the fine points of my story.
The pleasure's been all mine, Amy. Thank you again. And to all the listeners, remember that next week's show is going to be broadcasting from Cyrus World. So go get your download and come on in and play with us for the 2 hours. That's CyrusWorld.com, C-Y-R-E-S, World.com, or you can go in through the UofAttraction.com. Come in and play with us. So we'll see you all next week. Have a good one. Bye. Thank you for joining us on Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules. For more information, go to Law of Attraction Radio Network at lawofattracttalkradio.com or lawofattractiontools.com.